super tight,
yeah,
super curt.
Especially since
we're in After Dark mode, appropriately live from Santa Barbara. So like Santa Barbara is like a very like Cinemax type of town. I don't know. I don't even know why. I just feel like it is.
It does kind of have that feel to it where it is that kind of like, it feels like things like a lot of TV shows could be shot there, but I don't know how many shows are actually shot there.
I think just like in the true style of Cinemax, it's all simulated.
Yeah.
You know?
yeah. My God. Let's get this After Dark episode up and running here. Welcome to the F1 Files, folks. This is our Formula One podcast, After Dark. We are just a couple of dedicated, lifelong Formula One fans who love the sport, regardless of what time of day it is, and regardless of whether the sport loves us back. I'm one of the hosts. My name is Corey Willis. I'm a writer, actor, improviser out here in Los Angeles, California.
And I'm John Lepore, creative consultant designing the future for film technology and automotive. And I'm triggering this After Dark blackout because I am recording live from my national rental car parked alongside the Santa Barbara Hilton while sitting in the car just by the glow of the instrument panel reflecting off of my glass of red wine that I'm drinking in the rental car in the parking lot.
Okay.
Yes. So I'm in full After Dark mode.
Nice.
Let's do this.
I love it. Well, we are in the lead up to the return to the Shanghai Grand Prix, the Chinese Grand Prix. Initially, I had done like the COVID thing where I was like, oh, yeah, I just don't acknowledge the couple of years where COVID happened. But we haven't been back to China since 2019, Johnny. That's bananas. Truly bananas. Yep. I can't believe that it's been 5 years since we've been there. This is what kind of makes Zhou Guanyu's triumphant return not even a triumphant return. It's actually his debut. He hasn't even had a chance to race at his home Grand Prix. So very excited for that. Excited for the pageantry that's kind of going on right now. Like all the drivers showed up. They were kind of sprinkled throughout the Far East. I don't think too many people went home between the Japanese Grand Prix and now. So it seems as though people are there. The Grand Prix itself is under a lot of uncertainty. There's just this like cloud of uncertainty, and all the teams are kind of expressing it behind the scenes. And I think that there are some real worries about what we've got going on this coming weekend. Have you heard anything about this, Johnny? Have you heard any concerns about this?
I mean, I've been mostly out of the loop, but like when you say, you know, uncertainty, is this just about the, you know, the state of Formula One in China? Is it about just the fact that this is the first time that this era of car is going to be driven on this circuit? Like what are the things that are making this feel so unpredictable going in?
So the state of F1 in China, I believe, is pretty good. From what I understand, when these tickets went on sale, the particular grandstand that is named for Zhou Guanyu sold out in like a couple of minutes, and they've had no problem.
Oh, it's awesome.
Yeah, so it's like the fan base in China is ravenous. They love F1, and it is going to be really, really, again, it's really cool to see F1's return to China after so long. because these fans are now really, really fired up about it. And it's like early in the year and everything. We've got teams like Haas bringing upgrades, which were completely unexpected. We've got Ferrari performing really, really well. And this is like one of those Grand Prix that the Chinese fans come out for when Ferrari does well, even more, because they got to watch, you know, the era of dominance back when Schumi was around, and then also when Alonso was driving for them, and when Massa was driving for them and doing really, really, like, there's a lot of history with Ferrari in China. So there's a lot of excitement around it, but also the teams themselves are worried because, one, this is a sprint race. So this is the first sprint race of the season. And there's now a revised format with the sprint race, which all by itself brings its own set of challenges. So we've got free practice one on Friday, and then the sprint shootout. So that's the qualifying for the sprint race happens now on Friday. So it used to be qualifying for the Grand Prix happened on Friday, and then they'd have sprint qualifying and then the sprint race on Saturday. So we've now got sprint qualifying on Friday. Then there's the sprint race itself, followed by qualifying for the Grand Prix on Saturday. And then we've got the Grand Prix itself on Sunday. So kind of a traditional, quote unquote, format relative to the first couple of Grand Prix that were night races and also Saturday races. So we've got a continuation of that. But because it's the sprint race, they only have the one practice session. And then they go right into sprint qualifying, in essence. There is an update now to the sprint qualifying format where they're basically introducing a Parc Fermé, or they're suspending Parc Fermé rules between the sprint race itself and the actual qualifying session for the Grand Prix. So now the teams will be able to make the necessary changes in setup within an allotted amount of time between the sprint race itself and then the qualifying session. So the race ideally will be different than the actual sprint, like, because teams will learn something. So that's all well and good. Those are positive changes. However, because they have not been back to this circuit in 5 years, that means that these new cars haven't driven on this surface, which also means these new tires have never been driven on this surface. And that is a huge problem. Like, that introduces a big problem here, because we've got different tire sizes. It's not just different tires themselves and compounds. The tires themselves are much larger. On top of that, we have a new surface on the track as well. So not only have the tires never been driven on this track, this track has never been driven on by F1 cars at all, ever. The circuit itself, yes, but the surface of the track has never met with current compounds of these F1 tires. So these teams are like, okay, we have literally like no data to operate on right now. We're just crossing our fingers and hoping that the temperatures are what they are supposed to be so that we can actually run the proper tire compounds.
It's effectively like we're racing at a track for the first time ever. And I mean, that's kind of thrilling. I think there's always something exciting
for the fans.
About that.
Oh God. Yeah. It is so thrilling. I'm so excited. I mean, first of all, it's a sprint format, which means that like Red Bull won't have the time to set their tires up and set their car up to be as competitive as they normally would. Ferrari is doing really, really well this year. Right. Mercedes tends to do extremely well after their first practice session and then not at all throughout the race weekend. But if you've got competitive sessions immediately after that first practice session, I can see Mercedes doing much better. Right. So, and also McLaren's going to be suffering this weekend because they've got a lot of long, slow speed corners, which is like a big problem for McLaren in the way that their car is set up. So, the field is going to be jumbled up quite a bit. Fans, we love this, right? But the teams are like, hey, we're kind of freaking out. We have no idea what to expect right now. So hopefully we can like all compete in every single competitive session. I think a couple of teams are going to get caught out in like weird, wild ways where their cars just do not work with the temperatures. It might also rain. Like, it's raining in Shanghai right now. There's footage of Valtteri Bottas on his road bike driving around the circuit in like a downpour. So like,
oh,
yeah, yeah. So it might be the first wet weather race of the year. So it's like there are so many factors that the teams are just like, hey, maybe this was the worst idea ever to have a sprint race at China on its return after 5 years. I can't help but kind of agree with them. This could make for really cool, a fun, like shuffled up grid, but this could also make for like a tragically uncompetitive, uneventful outing, right? Like,
yeah,
like there's a real danger. So
I'm here for a little bit of the chaos, and mm-hmm. I certainly, you know, I think as with everybody, hope it goes in the direction of it just mixing things up a little bit. But yeah, there's, you know, there's also going to always be sort of one team or one competitor that's feeling significantly more reassured no matter how many things get turned upside down on them as possible. So
yeah,
we'll see. We'll see where it goes.
We will. That there's also the fact that like the schedule itself is jumbled around, and because it's on the other side of the planet from the US and also the UK, like I think like sprint qualifying is at like 4 o'clock in the morning in the UK. So it's going to be like all over the place. For the US, it's not so bad though. I mean, that actually kind of works for us, but a lot of the people who watch these races in the UK who are already kind of like a little annoyed and put off by, let's say, like the lack of attention and catering that F1 has been doing to the European markets. I think this is going to be a bizarre race to watch, and maybe a little bit difficult for a big swath of the fandom. We'll see.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Hey, that's all right. Then right after that, they've got Miami to look forward to.
Exactly.
As, you know, as the European fan base, I'm sure, absolutely love.
Is so excited for.
Good God.
Oh, there was also a report that, like, the Grand Prix this past year sold more, like generated more revenue than I think combined ticket sales for every single home Dolphins game of the entire season. Like there was like,
wow.
Yeah. Like F1 is staying in Miami, folks. There's no way they are going to get rid of that race. If all the, like, I mean, for people outside of the US, there are some listeners of ours outside of the US, like football is the most dominant sport here in the US. It makes the most money. Franchises make the most money off of them, off of the games, especially home games. So the fact that like a legendary team like the Miami Dolphins couldn't hold a candle to a single event over the course of their entire season. I think they probably have like, if they make the playoffs, it's like into the double digits, but they definitely have 8 or 10 home games every year. So it's not insignificant, that figure. But yeah, that's the race coming up. I think for the fans, Johnny, like you said, it's going to be entertaining. It's going to be fun. There's a lot of mystery out there. But for the teams, I think it's going to be difficult for them to figure out how to run this Grand Prix, this entire Grand Prix weekend, not just the race, because it literally is multiple competitive points paying sessions at a track that none of them have been to in 5 years. Half the grid was like under 20 when we were last there.
I'm excited to just see what's happened with Chinese Formula One fandom and how it's evolved since the sort of explosion of popularity in F1. Has there been anything else happening, you know, not directly in regards to the Chinese Grand Prix, but just in general, that's been getting Formula One fandom fired up?
I think as far as like, I mean, if we want to dip kind of back into the trash corner and conspiracy closet, there was some info leaked about the upcoming Concorde Agreement, where basically F1, the teams have been like, yeah, I think we're going to literally write into the Concorde Agreements that there can only be 10 teams on the grid.
Oh, God. Yeah, I saw this. Also, at some point, it may have been in the last week, maybe it was a bit before that, Andretti broke ground on a headquarters, like a secondary headquarters at Silverstone, I think, or just outside of Silverstone.
Just outside of Silverstone, And they were like,
and they're basically just like, no, everything's fine. The wedding is going on as planned. I know that she posted on Facebook that, you know, she's done with me and everything's over, but trust me, just, you know, hold on to your invitations, show up as planned.
I promise.
There's just a couple things we've got to sort out.
There's a little something weird happened with the catering. So she might be a little bit like a little frazzled if you bring it up to her. She might be a little confused because there's been a misunderstanding, but it's still happening. It's definitely, it's, I mean, I love that they're doing this. I also love that they're like, they were like, oh, we are going to create 1,100 positions for Formula One staff in the heart of Formula One at Silverstone. So they're basically just being like, hey, folks, you don't have to come over to Indianapolis. We got like this really cool campus and we're setting up this really, really interesting facility over there. But like, you also don't have to move to the States. You can just keep living in the UK. And because of modern technology, we are able to do it. There's also something huge about the fact that Michael Andretti is spearheading the initiative to break ground on a base in Europe. I mean, this dude, one of the reasons he didn't stay in F1 was because he refused to live in Europe, because he would fly home after every single race and be like, no, I'm not even going to get an apartment in the UK. So the fact that he is like breaking ground on a new facility and then hiring on staff from Europe and the UK is like, that speaks a whole lot to the important people in F1. I think it's not that like the fans aren't important, but I think like the people who really move things behind the scenes, and I'm talking about like sponsors and people like the people who help inject cash into the back end of a business and the development side of a business, these teams like Oracle, right? These teams like that come in and go like, oh, we'll handle all your data management. Because you set up shop and you made, you built up jobs in the constituency of a place that we lobby politicians. You set up shop, so here are a bunch of our best employees to help you get your business up and running right. Like, this is, it's monumental.
I mean,
yeah.
Damn it, I want to be optimistic about the Andretti mission, but I also can't help but also like think of like, all right, well, the journey that they've taken has been doing everything required, pulling together all the money necessary, then being told that actually we needed 3.5 times as much money as was originally expected. And them saying, okay, cool, we'll do that. And then them saying, well, also you need an engine supplier too. And they're like, cool, we could dig up one of those, and they did.
Yeah,
which that alone was like a miracle in and of itself. And then there was a, well, actually, we really don't appreciate the fact that you've been talking to everybody about all of your plans every step of the way. That's not the way we do business. We do everything covertly. And they were like, okay, we could put duct tapes over our mouths and whatnot. And then they still came back, you know, and said, sorry guys, no dice. This just doesn't seem like it's going to work out. And now they're kind of like going back to being like, well, let's keep going. Let's take the duct tape off of our mouths and keep, you know, just keep putting this out there. And even the, like, the sort of like, yeah, we could bring a bunch of jobs to this sport is another kind of like F you to the Formula One group that are blocking them out. Cause it's sort of one of those things being like, oh, so you don't want those jobs available to people? Like, it's just one of those easy ways of like, oh, so you want the children to be hurt by your decision-making process? It's just this sort of like, you know, continuing to go to war. And so like, yeah, I'm like gutted, but not at all surprised to hear that the next iteration of the Concorde Agreement is just going to be like, there will never be more than the teams that we have now.
Yeah. It's and, like, there can only be 10 teams. Wait, how many teams do you have right now? Oh, wow. Look at that. It's only 10. Wait, actually, we already have 10 teams. So I guess you read the agreement, huh? I guess you can count, right?
Man, this is this is the most brutal cafeteria to try and
it really is.
Get a seat at the table at. Jesus.
It really is.
I don't know what to make of any of this from here going forward. Like, I really don't know where this is going to go for Andretti.
Hey, so maybe tiptoeing into the conspiracy corner, this is Alpine maybe going like, hey, maybe we go, maybe we just like transfer all of our staff at Enstone over to this new facility, and basically we just become Andretti.
Alpinetti.
Yeah, Alpinetti. And we sell luxury cars with like slick backed hair now, instead of like we take the beret off and reveal slick back jet black Italian hair. I don't know. There's a chance that maybe it does go belly up, but I do have a little bit of faith that Alpine will fold and then have to sell their team off, which is not good. But also, homeboy who runs it, Fermi, I think. I don't remember what his last name is. I think it's like Bruno Fermi. But anyways, this dude.
You mean the guy that's been running the team into the ground for the last like 2 to 3 years?
Well, here's the thing, is he goes, he's been running the team. You just said it perfectly, John. He's been running the team basically behind the scenes for a couple of years since what's his name? Rossi basically was like fired. He's been running the team, and he was like, look, the reason that the car is bad this year, it's only because, one, we didn't take a step forward. So the car's not actually bad. It's actually really good. It's just that all the other teams took a step forward and we didn't. Also, all the things that are wrong with this car, those were decisions that were taken last year. So I actually didn't have anything to do with it. And John, you just said it. It's like, actually, dude, you've been running the team for like a couple, like almost 3 years now. Like, what? How is... Just because you had like a puppet, it doesn't mean because you fired the puppet, you get to go like, oh, I mean, I'm the puppet master, but I can't be in. The puppet said some horrible things, but I was controlling it the entire time. But like, I fired that thing, so it's not my. I mean, I changed my voice. It was a different voice. it's not looking promising for Alpine. But anyways, let's move out of the conspiracy closet and the trash corner, and dive into this new Alonso signing.
Yes,
this is major news. This is like,
how long was this contract? So he's extended his contract with Aston Martin.
Yes.
How long is it for?
So he said it hasn't been like fully, the details of these are never like in absolution revealed until well after the fact that they're either done or their driver retires. But he said personally, Alonso's like, this is the longest deal I've ever signed. And the deal that he signed with Ferrari, I think, was a 5-year deal. So this is at least a 5-year deal that Alonso has now signed with Aston Martin.
I don't even understand how that's possible. I mean, he's 43.
I think he's 43. Yeah, I think he's
all right. So I think he's our age. I'm 43. Yeah. I'm 43, and like, I get like, you know, I just drove from Yosemite to Santa Barbara today, driving down the winding mountain road, which is like, it's like one of my favorite things to do.
Yes.
But this was going like, this was winding mountain road, like nonstop for like 90 minutes. And I was starting to get to the point where like, I was getting that, like,
you get fatigued,
extra like amount of like saliva in my mouth. Mm-hmm. Like I'm feeling like I'm like about to blow chunks just from like, being like right hairpin, left hairpin.
That you're taking at
right
like
hairpin
25 miles an hour. Like you're not
in a RAV4. Yeah. In a squishy, soft RAV4.
Yes.
You know, with while like casually sipping seltzer water and listening to NPR. And Fernando is my age and he's like basically just like, all day long, I'm going to do the NASA G-Force simulator that makes people black out.
Yep. That's it. That's my entire, that's my want. So that is his intention until he is almost 50 years old. He has signed a deal to drive for Aston Martin. Now, this is something that is, I guess we're kind of dipping back into the conspiracy closet here. But this might be because Fernando Alonso is going like, well, I do want to work with Aston Martin and I can kind of partner with them and like really push the boundaries of what I can do with a Honda powered motor right now. And then once I finish and get either close to a championship or win a championship with them, I can then move into the World Endurance Championship. I say this because maybe, possibly, Adrian Newey might go and work with Aston Martin at some point. And he's openly said, like, oh, the two biggest regrets I have in my career are, one, that I did not get to work with Fernando Alonso, and two, that I did not get to work with Lewis Hamilton. And it's like, oh, I guess, and three, I never got to work with Ferrari directly. So like, there's a chance that Adrian Newey could go and work with Aston Martin. And if he works with Aston Martin, he gets to work with Fernando Alonso on an amazing project. And then after they win another championship together, or win a championship together, rather, they then pivot into the World Endurance and then go and win some Le Mans or other WEC races. So I think that that's one of the reasons Fernando is sticking around, is that he sees the long game. He sees a brand ambassadorship. Yep. He sees potential World Endurance Championship stuff going into his 60s, right? Like he's an uncle. He now brings his family to the track. He now has like kind of like put together part of that extra element that he sacrificed, and that he's always kind of been like, oh, I only really focused on racing and never had a family. Well, now he's got like family coming and supporting him. He's on a team that has regularly gotten him podiums. He might actually get back on top of the podium at some point if things work out. I mean, he almost did in Monaco. Like if they had stopped one lap earlier, I think Fernando Alonso would have won for the first time in like 4,000 days at Monaco. Like they're in the wet. Like there's a lot that he has within his striking distance. So I think he wants to stick around for as long as possible.
Like, this is insane. Mm-hmm. But this also starts to put a little bit of control around the unbelievably volatile, silly season that we have ahead of us, right?
Yep.
Like, the silly season has seemed like such a crapshoot, more so than we have seen mm-hmm. in a very long time. And this is almost, you know, intensely stabilizing of that.
Yes.
Yes. I forget who it was. I think it was one of the Sky Sports pundits did his updated version of that, like, image of these are all the drivers' headshots and where they land across all the teams.
Yeah.
And I looked at it and, like, immediately did, like, an audible scoff that, like, sprayed spit all over my phone when seeing this image. And it was because they were like, well, because Alonso is sticking around at Aston Martin, truly the outcome of this is that Carlos Sainz will be driving next year for Kick Sauber. And I was just like, I refuse to accept that that's even a possibility. Like, I would say, like, Carlos Sainz spend a year driving Indy cars mm-hmm. or
take a year off, dude. Yeah.
You know, yeah. Making Gymkhana films in his father's old rally car or something, yeah. You know, like,
yeah. Well, there's also the fact that, or not the fact, but there's, like, a rumor that Audi / Sauber / Kick / Stake has basically said to Carlos Sainz, hey, buddy, we need you to make a decision by the end of this weekend, at the end of the Chinese Grand Prix weekend, or we're making the decision for you, which is like, wait a second. His only option is to drive for Sauber, and Sauber is going, hey, you're not really our only option, so, like, you need to make a decision because we might go in a different direction. It's like, that's crazy to me. That is crazy. But I think,
it's just insane.
That's what we're in. That's the world that we're in. I think that, yeah, now Carlos Sainz is not going to take that other seat at Aston Martin because that seat belongs to Lance Stroll. And we all know that Aston Martin is never going to get rid of Lance Stroll as long as his dad owns the team. That's just not going to happen. I should say Lance Stroll will never leave Aston Martin unless he's guaranteed a World Endurance Championship seat. And that's not what Aston Martin is doing right now. And I don't think Lawrence Stroll will ever fire his own son. So I think Carlos Sainz no longer has a seat at Aston Martin. I think one of his only other options is doing a one-year deal at Mercedes because, like, Toto has openly been like, oh, yeah, we're putting Kimi Antonelli in that seat at the end of the year. Like, that is what's happening.
Yeah.
Like, Kimi Antonelli just did tests at the Red Bull Ring. Like, he's not just it. He's, like, currently doing tests at the Red Bull Ring right now in the W12. So they're, like, baby stepping Kimi Antonelli up to the current car so that he can be comfortable driving a car that, I mean, was horrifying to say that the W12 is the best version of the Mercedes available, but, like, they're giving him, like, a really good version to build up his confidence at the Red Bull Ring, and then they're going to give him, like, a not so great version of the car, and then they're going to probably put him in some free practice one seats by the end of the year. So that seat is basically locked off for Carlos. Like, he will not be, if he does drive for Mercedes for 1 year, it would maybe be to hold it down while Kimi Antonelli was getting up to speed. Maybe. I mean, that's like, if Kimi Antonelli can't get it together this year, then that's what Carlos has available to him. Otherwise, he drives for Haas or Williams. I mean, Logan Sargent is pretty much like he's done. That dude's done. I don't mean to be so dismissive of him, but like, I can't see him sticking around. Can you?
I mean, like, do I think he should stick around? Hard pass.
Yeah.
Do I think he still is going to be maintaining some form of diplomatic immunity?
Maybe. I guess.
Highly possible.
Yeah. I mean, we've said it for two years.
I still don't know. Yeah, I still don't know what that is doing financially for Williams.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. But also,
I think there's a possibility there. But I mean, I actually wouldn't mind seeing Carlito in a Williams.
I wouldn't mind him either. I wouldn't mind that. I mean,
I do still think like Williams has been like most likely to improve.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And yes. Albon has been flexing hard
yes.
in that car.
Yes.
And so it would be fun to just see what happens when you put a top tier driver into that. Also, even just as a way of like evaluating, it's like where does Albon really sit?
Yeah.
In the strata of Formula One.
Because he hasn't really had to compete against someone that is like on par with even like the top of the midfield, right? Like he's never really had, other than when he was driving for Red Bull and he drove for Alpha too for a year, right? Or he was like their reserve driver and then he went over to Williams.
But I think he's evolved quite a bit over the past few seasons.
I think so.
And we're seeing, you know, this new level of greatness from him.
Yeah.
I'd love to see it tested against someone else with some serious stripes.
Yeah.
What about the second seat at Red Bull Senior?
I mean, there's still a lot riding on like the relationship between Jos Verstappen and Carlos Sainz Sr. I think that is still something that like they're not fully on board to bring him in, especially because Sergio Perez is not winning races like he was last year at this point in the season, but he seems to be much closer and seems to be struggling a lot less over the entire weekend than he ever did last year. So I don't know I think Sergio still has to really push himself, right? Like he still has to like show up every single session of every single Grand Prix, but I don't think he's as in danger as he was. Specifically because he is, you know, he's showing up right now. Even though he didn't necessarily show up big when Max had his DNF, but he also had floor damage. So like the team has already excused that. The only people who are like, yeah, we don't know about that, it's the press and some fans who are like, Red Bull's making excuses for Sergio. Has Red Bull ever made an excuse for Sergio Perez, or have they just immediately thrown him under the bus?
True.
So I trust them being like, no, he had floor damage. That's why he wasn't where he should have been. So I don't know if that seat is going to be available to him, and that might be why he's holding out. But, and I say he, I say, I mean, why Sainz might be holding out with signing with someone else. But I think that seat is getting further and further from his reach the longer we go, right? And then Yuki Tsunoda is the other person who might take the Aston Martin seat, who would have, but he's like, again, they're not going to kick Lance Stroll out in order to put Yuki Tsunoda in. It doesn't matter how much money Honda puts behind Yuki when they sign him up, when they take on Aston Martin as their factory team.
It's true.
Yeah.
But yeah. All right. So I sense there's still going to be some wiggle room going into deeper into the silly season that's already begun.
For sure.
I think there's going to be like at least one more unexpected or shocking or surprising move that'll shake things up a little bit, and we'll see what happens from there.
Yeah.
I think so before we wrap.
Yeah.
Tell me you've got some other like super insane lucid trash.
Okay.
For me to take like a big nostril whiff of.
Okay.
To kind of just fuel me between now and the Chinese Grand
Johnny,
Prix.
I got you. I got you. I have you firmly in my arms, cradling you. So the most recent bit of trash is, and it's been kind of like disproven, but like, yeah, what's, I don't trust that at all. I don't trust disproven trash. I trust the reek of the stench of the filthy decaying trash that I know is somewhere in this room. And that,
yeah, disproving trash is just trying to rinse trash off.
No.
Sometimes all that does is make more trash.
Exactly. Look, what do you do with the bleach that you fill your trash can with when you clean it up? Do you just hold on to that bleach water, that nasty bleach water, or has it become trash itself?
Now it's become toxic trash.
Exactly. Yeah. Now you can't even pour it down the sewer because it's so bad. so this toxic trash that I am going to drop on you is Adrian Newey was spotted at the Bologna airport. He was fully spotted there. If you look on a map at where the Bologna airport is, it is just the shortest little drive to Maranello. It's the shortest, tiniest little gentle drive up a road to the base of Ferrari. Now,
are you sure this doesn't just mean that Newey got like a Groupon for pasta making lessons or something like
there,
that?
There is. All right. So there was some official news on this, which is, and it was actually documented by possibly an Adrian Newey selfie or someone from the Red Bull staff taking a picture of Adrian Newey. Apparently he went to an event at Mugello. So Mugello is the test track.
It's Ferrari's test track.
Yeah. Right? So, but it was a Red Bull event. He's seen wearing like Red Bull kit. Like he's in a Red Bull shirt. And like, it's like a, you know, Adrian Newey kind of doing like the smiley squinty face. So they were doing some sort of testing, of some sort of vehicle. I think it's a road car maybe, or something that he was working on. It was a private event at Mugello, and I haven't seen any footage from what was on track. But it was not a Ferrari. But John, you can't go to a Ferrari test track. You can't fly into the airport that the Ferrari team flies into and out of. You can't eat in those restaurants without someone along the way being a representative of John Elkann, right? Like John Elkann has to have like hired, like he has to have like put every Uber driver in that region on like on some sort of payroll. He has to be like an investor at every cafe, every restaurant. He employs the staff at the Ferrari test track, right? Like someone had to have been a representative from Ferrari who was just like, oh, wow, look at that. Oh, wow, that plot of land over there looks like it's like for sale. I wonder if anyone.
I mean, that's it's all I can imagine. Every single person that he comes in contact with.
Yes.
Is just like, you know, like. Here is your dinner, sir. I hope you enjoy it. It's a lot better than Austrian food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We do this version of schnitzel here. I don't know if you've ever had schnitzel before, but like we do this almost like exact same dish, but 1,000 times better right here. And you could have this whenever you want it. I feel as though you can't go to that part of Italy without running into someone who wants to talk about Ferrari with you. And I'm saying just as like a person, like as a person in the world traveling to Italy, eventually someone's going to be like referencing Ferrari in that specific part of Italy. I mean, having as someone who's gone to Italy, like, and not worn any Formula One gear whatsoever, I have partaken in conversations about Ferraris just like randomly with someone. And not even because like a beautiful Ferrari drove by, but just like it comes up. So if you're Adrian Newey, you definitely, someone definitely talked to you about Ferrari. Someone did. And I just have all the faith.
It's amazing.
I have so much faith that this man has gone like, you know what? I am going to stay here at Red Bull for a while. I'm going to stay here at Red Bull for a while, for sure. I'm not going to sign. I'm not. There's no reason for me to sign with anybody else. However, if I did want to just dip out and go and live out one of my dreams, which is to design something for Ferrari and to work directly with Lewis Hamilton, I could just take a year off and then come back in 2026. I could just do that. Especially if, like, I don't know, Ferrari happened to hire several people from my design team already, and those people went, oh, wait, Adrian retired this year? He's on gardening leave for all of 2025? Well, you know, we did have a bunch of conversations around the fact, like, you know, if I was ever designing a Ferrari, this is the direction I might take it in. Like, those conversations absolutely happened. So I have...
I just like to think that even these other rumors about like Aston Martin courting him and whatnot, all those things are doing is they're all just chipping away at the bond between Newey and Red Bull.
Yeah.
And that ultimately he'll be like, yeah, you know, I am thinking about leaving Red Bull because Aston's offering me so much money and, you know, basically a position in, you know, Saudi royalty or something to that effect. But then and then all of a sudden he's just like, but the taste of that basil pesto with the,
I love it.
You could taste the soil in the red wine. Yep. It was just,
like he's just like, oh man, I've had like, I'm British and I've had bolognese so many times in Britain, but I've never had like a proper bolognese while in Bologna, Italy. Like I haven't had it with like regionally grown tomatoes, and the animals in a pasture that I passed by were the ones that provided the milk and then the actual protein. Like, oh God, I just can't, I don't know. As a person who has like nothing really drawing me to Italy, if someone was ever to just like lean into me and be like, hey, so I have this like plot of land and I have this opportunity for you to move to Italy. If you just like wanted to, you could do that. I mean, yeah, you'll have to find like a job and you'll have to like basically like reorganize your entire life, but it is Italy. I would be like, yeah, dude, do you have pictures? Do you have do you know, like, what's the closest airport? How do I get there? Get me there immediately. And this is Adrian Newey we're talking about. Someone who definitely has a very distinct and deliberate interest in spending time in Northern Italy and designing road cars for a brand like Ferrari. I mean, come on. So that's where I think we'll leave it this week, Johnny. I think that's the trash to suckle on.
It's good. That's a good peak of Trash Mountain.
Yeah.
To stand atop, to look outwards from.
Yeah.
I love it. So for you, Corey, Formula One stock, has it gone up this week?
I think it has gone up primarily because there is some morbid interest in what. For the diehard fans, like ourselves, I think there's some morbid interest in like, oh my God, what kind of carnage are we going to see? What kind of attrition are we going to witness at this Chinese Grand Prix? Because none of the teams know what they're doing. Like, it's going to be weird. It's going to be wild. Also, that first sector of the Grand Prix is so twisty and so turny, and getting 20 cars through there on cold tires and full fuel. Oh boy, there's bound to be some action. So yeah, I think the stock is up. I think even the Fairweather fans, even the new fans, are certainly interested because it's a sprint race. It's more action on track. And then also the people who are brand new fans probably have never seen a Chinese Grand Prix before. So it's more enthusiastic fan base to like digest and watch these like wild fans in China and how much they support Ferrari specifically, but also Zhou Guan Yu at his first home Grand Prix. I think there's a lot of interest. So stock is up, significant uptick, not like a hockey stick, but like it's on the rise. What about you, Johnny? Where do you think we're at?
I'll give it a little bump, partially because as I'm on vacation, my wife got from our local library, she had actually, I think she had like pre-reserved it specifically for me, a nice little beach read called The Formula by Joshua Robinson and Jonathan Clegg. It's a brand new bestseller that came out in the last month. The subtitle for it is The Formula, How Rogues, Geniuses, and Speed Freaks Re-engineered F1 into the world's fastest growing sport. And although I'm only like, I'm barely making a dent in it because almost every single time I crack it open, I fall deeply asleep just more due to like me just trying to survive a family vacation.
Exactly. If you've got a bit of downtime, then you're like, oh, I should sleep probably. Yeah, it's a good point, John.
But it's been a wonderful read so far and does a good job of like capsulizing, history of the sport while contextualizing it with everything that's been happening, currently. So I'd put that as a hard recommend to anybody who enjoys our podcast and enjoys hearing, particularly about the way that we talk about, like the way that we, as a culture or a zeitgeist, are accepting this sport and the way that it continues to evolve.
Holy fucking shit.
Thank baby Jesus.
All right. Well, let the folks know exactly where they can find you out there in the world. Or online, Johnny.
You can find me shadily recording podcasts in a hotel parking lot near you anytime you want. Please don't call the local authorities or even the local security task force on me. I don't have it in me to resist. All right. Corey, where can the folks find you?
You can track me down. I'm Burn Corey Burn on all the things. We're also the F1 Files on Twitter, on TikTok, and then Instagram as well. My God, what an amazing strife-filled end of this record. I actually am going to leave this last little bit in just so people can speculate and wonder if they did make it to the end. What exactly happened when there was an abrupt cutoff? Well, folks, you can catch up with us the next time if Zencaster lets us. Just because we are definitely going to try to catch up with you the next time, regardless of whether or not Zencaster lets us. On the F1 Files. God in heaven.